Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the 9320 No History podcast. Today we've got an absolute belter full of ups and downs, 100 goals, mercurial Algerians, farewell to Main Road, hello to the city of Manchester Stadium, who remembers that? And just a few other bits and pieces to top us off. Yes, if you've not gathered already, we're discussing the Kevin Keegan era, when Kevin Keegan led the Blues from 2001 to 2005. And given that, I would love nothing more than to have the 9320 podcast deleting with me here today. So with that said, I've gone direct to the boardroom, and joining me is firstly Mr. Howard Hocking, as always. Howard, are you okay?
Yeah, fine, thanks. Are you?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Although I do currently now own a dartboard with Gareth Southgate's face on it, but that's another matter.
Oh, you didn't have one already? I've had mine for years.
Yeah, well, starting to question why I didn't. But yes, you're okay.
Yeah, I am. Not bad at all. Sun's out, so everything's okay.
Sun's out, guns out. Happy days. And of course, I've also got Mr. Asan with us today. Asan, how are you doing? Are you okay?
I'm really good. How are you, Joe?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Not too bad. It's been too long. Always good to be on a pod with you, sir. So, with that said, as I alluded to in the opening, Southgate aside, we will be discussing another former England manager in Mr. Kevin Keegan. Now, obviously, Kevin Keegan, a huge name in world football throughout his illustrious playing career. And it's fair to say he also made a large splash as a manager. Firstly, with Newcastle United, who he took from the bottom end of the second tier of English football, turning them into essentially the first real entertainers, you could argue, of the Premier League era, as they famously went very, very close to winning the Premier League title in 1996. He then, of course, manages Fulham under Mohamed Al-Fayed when they were spending big money, leading them to the second tier from the third, before having a crack at the famous poison chalice of the England manager's job. To set the scene here, before I bring our fantastic panel in, City, as we've discussed on a former episode of No History, had a fairly tumultuous few years leading up to 2001. To set the scene, in 1999-2000, promoted to the Premier League following the famous promotion the prior season to that against Gillingham at Wembley. But it had probably been one promotion too many, and City found themselves relegated back to the First Division in their penultimate season at Main Road, causing the club to act and what was quite a messy exit, sadly, at the time, but dispensed with the services of Joe Royal, who had served the club so well, both as a player and as a manager. And David Bernstein is quoted as saying that there was 20 serious applications for the job at the time, but their heart was set on one Kevin Keegan, who accepts the job in late May of 2001. And he says at the time, "It's a fantastic opportunity. It's a similar situation to Newcastle, if not exactly the same. This is a sleeping giant, and it is my job to turn it around. It is exciting to think that in a couple of years' time, we'll be in a new stadium, so we must be in the Premier League by then." Of course, he almost famously says his mother always warned him about crossing the main road in typical Kevin Keegan fashion. Howard, I think it's fair to say at the time, this was considered quite a big coup by the English media and even some City fans. Is that how you remember it yourself?
Ish. Yeah, I think it was in a way. I think it was quite an exciting signing because of how he approached the game, how he played football, and he did have a reputation. So it's, I guess whether it's a coup or not, it depends on where you say City are at that moment. And you say it's so yo-yo up and down and all over the place that it's hard to say how big a club we were or how much pull we had at that time. But of course, we're not in the Premier League. So it was really to get the last England manager. I think he'd left 6 months previous or something like that. It's, yeah, in a way, a very big coup for a championship side or whatever it was called in those days. So, yeah, absolutely. It was something of a coup. He was a name. He was flawed. I'm sure we'll get to that. But I think it's more the excitement as fans that, you know, I loved the previous manager, but of course, had gone sour. The club wasn't in a great place at that precise moment in time. And it felt that's what you want from a new manager. It's something to excite, something different. And you knew from his CV already that City were not going to be boring under his leadership.
No, that's a very good point. And Eysan, just to set the scene somewhat with Keegan's CV, as he alluded to in his opening quotes there on being appointed, he'd taken over Newcastle and turned them into a real powerhouse in the early to mid-90s. You know, both commercially off the pitch as well as on it, they were competing for transfers at the highest level. I mean, he signs Alan Shearer, for example, in on the back of Euro 96 for £50 million, which is something like £300 million in today's money. It was astronomical. Mm. And of course, he also is known for the swashbuckling football with initially players like Peter Beardsley and Andy Cole and then Ginola. And he very much fit into what City fans have been harping for, I think it's fair to say, back to the eras of the Peter Barnes and the Dennis Tewetts, that free-flowing attacking football that had been missing for so long. Were you also conflicted in that Joe Royal was so popular? Or did you feel that it was a real statement of intent by the club on the back of a disappointing relegation at the time?
Yeah, so, I mean, I kind of disagree with Howard just insofar as I think it's hard to overstate how high profile and how big a coup it was for City to get Keegan at the point at which they get Keegan, because we're not in the Premier League. I think with the best will in the world, if you go backwards from Joe Royal, I mean, you're just going a long way to try and find a name that has the relevance footballing wise that Keegan had, not just in England, but around the world. I mean, you know, I remember at the time thinking, wow, genuinely. I think that we're even as loved as Joe Royal was, I think that, you know, and I think in a way Howard's right that two successive promotions was maybe a promotion too many.
Yeah, I agree.
But they probably needed the money. They probably needed that promotion to be able to, you know, get the finances in order so that even if they are relegated, to then be able to entice somebody like Keegan. So I remember my overarching feeling in that particular moment was that's huge.
Yeah, and I think just to build on that, I seem to remember it as it almost wiped out the disappointment and the toxicity of the relegation almost overnight.
I agree.
It was like, you know, which is pretty unprecedented, I would say. And we've suffered our fair share of relegations over the years, and you compare to going down with an Alan Ball or, you know, go on, sorry, what were you going to say?
Do you think that there was a feeling when Keegan came in, we're going straight back up? Do you think from day dot that there was that sort of optimism of we'll go back up here?
I think there was a reinforcement of the belief is that it's not just what we say. We actually are a big club. If we can attract these managers, and he is obviously, given his CV and what he's done at Newcastle, going to attract big players, as he did. And I think that kind of, it reinvigorated our belief in our own club somewhat, because there'd been so much optimism specifically on the back of the promotion at Blackburn that, you know, we were this sleeping giant. And then we went crashing down. It's like, it's just always going to be this way. But then when you go and get, like you say, someone who could realistically be in the frame for, other than, you know, the obvious jobs, pretty much any job in England at the time at club level, I think to land him was very impressive. Just following on from that point, there is mass optimism around the club. And obviously, despite us being in the second tier, the club really feels like it's on a momentum wave. And it doesn't go without issues, though, because Keegan, subsequently, since his reign at City, and other players have also touched on this, is that he inherited, and I think, Howard, if I'm not mistaken, you've said this before from people you've interviewed, that behind the scenes, there was quite a heavy drinking culture at the club, which David Bernstein was getting more and more concerned with, which is one of the key reasons I believe he actually decided to dispense with the services of Joe Royle in the end. And Keegan makes no bones about sorting this. He comes in and one of his first acts is to offload a real fan favourite, as I recall at the time, Mark Kennedy.
My absolute favourite, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big call because he was one of the few players who did actually do okay in that relegation season. And Richard Donny, who obviously goes on to have pretty much as good a career as he could have possibly hoped for, given where he was at this point, is put on a final warning. And I think there's a few other players who do actually end up getting offloaded as well later on. I mean, it was a bit of a shock, that, wasn't it? For him to come in and just offload into a direct promotion rival, really, in Wolves.
Well, I was thinking yesterday, I'm sure I've got Kevin Keegan's autobiography. Looked through a bookcase, couldn't find it. Opened a cupboard this morning and out it fell, like a gift from heaven. So, and obviously, there's City aren't the main bit of his autobiography. Very imaginative title, My Life in Football, it's called. But there's one chapter, or one or two chapters on City. And yeah, he says it was a marker. Mark Kennedy was like, well, if I can sell him, no one's safe. So book your ideas up. And it's weird in a way. I've never thought Keegan as a disciplinarian. You just think of a, you know, emotional guy who comes in and everyone's best friends and that. But absolutely, he walked into a situation that he realised very quickly had to be huge changes. And he mentioned in his autobiography, he went to look for a house, went for lunch in a bar, Up and Down or something it was called. And this was, you know, after training had finished an hour ago, he'd laid the law down to the squad and there were three players in there getting blottoed when he walked in to have lunch with his agent or state agent. So his initial attempts to lay down the law didn't go very well. Steve Harry was in there, Jeff Whitley, of course, Weaver, we all know, loved a drink, and Richard Dunn's final warning was still to come. So yeah, one of the most important things he did was not the recruitment, it was literally making everything a lot more professional, moving on into a modern era where that sort of thing was certainly was not acceptable, basically. To you want to be a success at club, it had to end there and then.
Do you not think that's a little bit a reflection of the size of the jobs that he'd had previously?
Well, we were behind the times, you mean, compared to where
a little bit. Like, if you think he's coming from Newcastle in England and Fulham, and you know, again, Fulham is a very different football club to City back then, primarily because of who their owner was and the finances that he had. But the kind of, you know, the rot of the successive relegations and kind of the way the makeup of the squad as it then gets promoted and then gets promoted again, to me it kind of makes sense that somebody like Keegan, with the experience or where he's coming from in terms of two relatively big Premier League jobs and then the national team job, he's going to have higher standards than were at the club at that time.
Yeah, agreed. And he's also got the authority to do it, hasn't he, because of who he is and what he's done. I think it's indicative of football as a whole.
Through that stage, though, didn't they? All went through the process, didn't they, really?
For sure.
From being that sort of club where, you know, drinking with social life was just part of it, to sports science taking over and realising, you know, it had to be done a different way. So, but City, yeah, were probably behind the curve, definitely, because no one else has stepped in to do anything.
I think it's similar to Pep Guardiola tactically now, in that as soon as Arsene Wenger arrived and stripped that out of Arsenal and the trophies started landing, it just cascades downwards and all the other clubs try and also get that competitive advantage, don't they? And it's just not tolerated and slowly dies out. But Keegan's initial signings are actually two very experienced players, but players that I would certainly say were coups at the time. I mean, for example, Ayol Berkovic arrives following an unsuccessful spell at Celtic, and he'd been a real star player for a good West Ham team. Of course, he played in that Southampton team that beat United. I think it was like 6-2, wasn't it, when they supposedly couldn't see each other's shirts.
The grey shirt.
Yeah. Egil Ostenstad et al. But yeah, it was... it was a good signing, to say the least. And another one, and he's automatically installed as captain, was Stuart Pearce. Stuart Pearce, we won't talk about his later spell at the club, but as a player, it's fair to say maybe wouldn't, as his last club, given his professionalism, and pretty much could have picked any number of Premier League clubs, probably wouldn't have come to City, it's fair to say, without a name like Kevin Keegan there. And I think given what we've said about the drinking culture at the club and maybe Andy Morrison, I think, was on the way out with injuries at this point, there wasn't really that real leader and professional in the dressing room, so to have an ex-England captain.
Thanks for listening to the first 15 minutes of the show. To listen to the full podcast and all our content, including reviews, previews, analysis, quizzes and much more, go to 9320.com to sign up now, or simply click the link in the description. So what are you waiting for? Go to 9320.com now for the best, most passionate, impartial coverage of Manchester City and beyond.